Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we'll be taking the pulse of one of the most heated races for the presidential nomination in history. Last night, Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. held primaries, and we'll find out who emerged victorious with CNN senior political correspondent Candy Crowley and David Nitkin of the Baltimore Sun. It's Wednesday, February 13th, and we are in the midst of our winter pledge drive, hoping you'll decide to pull up a chair, stay a while, and become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Pledging is easy, it's fast, and it feels great. This hour, we do have a goal of $3,000, and your pledge at any amount is our bread and butter. It's what sustains Wisconsin Public Radio and keeps us healthy. The number to call to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio is 1-800-383-9772. And I do want to say that if Kathleen Dunn could be here today, she'd be telling you all of this herself, and I am sure she's listening at home. But in case you may not have heard, Kathleen is at home recovering from heart surgery, and we're pleased to say the outlook is very positive. We're crossing our fingers here that she'll be back with us soon. We miss her, and we know that you miss her too. In the meantime, though, we do have to roll back our sleeves and take care of the business of supporting Wisconsin Public Radio and shows like Kathleen's and Joy's and Gene Faraca's, everyone here on the Talk Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To help me do that this hour is Michael Leland, Wisconsin Public Radio News Director. Michael, thanks for being here.
Happy to do it. Good morning to you, and good morning all of you who probably set aside this hour because you know you're going to get a chance to listen to some intelligent conversation and maybe contribute to the talk yourself. On the Kathleen Dunn program today, very appropriate to be wrapping up the primaries yesterday in Virginia, Washington, D.C., and in Maryland. We are next in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin primary coming up on Tuesday night. So sure, talk about that today and over the course of the next week. It's your dollars that make all of this happen. All of the conversations you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio or the news reporting you hear from NPR or whatever it is that brings you back to Wisconsin Public Radio day in and day out is possible because of listener support. People just like you deciding that this is a service not just listening to, worth not just listening to, but worth paying for as well. Please give us a call now with your pledge of support at whatever level works for you, 800-383-9772 or online at WPR.org.
Maybe if you're a new member of Wisconsin Public Radio, you'd like to get your feet wet with a pledge of $50. If you have been a member of Wisconsin Public Radio and maybe you'd like to renew your pledge, why not consider something like $12.50 a month? With that, you'd be pledging $120 to supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, and we'd be sending you out our little thank you gift, the Wisconsin Public Radio member benefit card. Lots of great deals that go along with that, including two nights for the price of one at over 50 bed and breakfasts and two-for-one entrees at hundreds of restaurants across Wisconsin. That's been very popular with listeners, and it's a great way to go, and especially great way to go, of course, is supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. The number to call is 1-800-383-9772 to pledge your support to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can always pledge online as well at WPR.org. Thanks for that call. And Michael, thank you.
Thank you.
Right now, we're going to go ahead and talk with CNN senior political correspondent Candy Crowley, who is in Wisconsin right now. Candy Crowley, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
I understand you were on the ground there at the Obama rally at the Kohl Center last night. Tell us what you saw and how the vibe felt.
Well, the vibe felt great. I mean, obviously, every time on the giant screen, another check mark was put by Obama's name, whether it was Maryland, Virginia, or the District of Columbia, they went wild while waiting for Obama. They wait for hours in these rallies, both for Hillary Clinton and for Barack Obama, and it's always kind of startling to walk in and see. Somebody told me the capacity there was 18,000. You probably know better than me, and it was completely full. So the vibe really good, as it usually is in college towns, I will say. Lots of young people, but a hugely diverse audience there to hear him claim three victories in a row and making it eight since last Friday.
So obviously with eight victories under his belt, he's got a lot of momentum going. And the question is, at what point does this momentum become unstoppable for Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think adding Wisconsin would be important for him because I do think the race before does affect the next race. Now, buyer's remorse tends to set in at some point, where people look and say, well, wait, do we really want this person? So front runners, which clearly Barack Obama is in every statistical way anyway, always face the possibility that voters will look and say, well, not so fast, let's take another look, that kind of thing. The problem I have at judging momentum at this point is that so far in this race, it's been so momentary. Now, we've never had 8 wins in a row. That is a fairly strong showing. So we'll see. I mean, I think Wisconsin's important to him, and obviously Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Texas are very important to her. She went to Texas right out of the Potomac primaries, and he came here.
So Ohio and Texas, I've heard, and those are the big states that the Clinton campaign is looking at picking up. And you did report on CNN last night that she lost her deputy campaign manager, which, you know, I suppose is par for the course in a political campaign like this. But does this sort of indicate a deeper problem that maybe there is some shuffling around going there, some unsettling feeling in the Clinton campaign?
Well, yes, they absolutely are unsettled. And they also are, what this really speaks to is money. This is a sign to donors. We get it. We understand there's a problem. We're making some changes. Stick with us. Because these Texas and Ohio primaries aren't till early March. So there is this sort of long dry spell that is looming for her, the way even the Clinton camp figures it up, certainly the way the Obama camp figures it up. They think in all these primaries, as little bitty as they may be, he's just going to keep racking up delegates, and we're going to keep reporting that he won another caucus or won another state. So she needs to assure those donors who are now getting just a little antsy. And as we know, she had trouble raising money in January. He raised more than twice as much as she did. She had to lend herself some money. So this is clearly a campaign that's been knocked back on its heels. It does not mean it's a campaign that's over by any stretch of the imagination. This is the Clinton campaign is a very well-oiled machine, despite its current problems throwing out its campaign manager, its deputy campaign manager. I suspect others will be leaving as well. But they needed really to show a sign to donors, we get it, we're changing things up, we're moving forward, don't lose heart.
So how strong is Clinton looking in Ohio and Texas? Is she starting to worry about those, or is there a sign that they are pretty solid and she can maybe not take them for granted but be pretty assured of a win there?
Well, here's the problem. The win won't be the only thing she needs. She needs a big win in these places. When you begin to add up the delegates, and I'm not a mathematician, but according to CNN's estimates that I've looked at over the past 24 hours, she needs to have big wins in those states, 55% of the delegates, because remember, the Democrats have proportional delegates. So he's going to take some. You get 20% in these states, you're going to take some delegates. So to overcome what's going to look like his natural lead, particularly at the end of this month, she's going to have to do very well. And by the time, if he racks up, delegate here, delegate there, as we're going through these primaries and caucuses until March, that statistic gets higher and higher for her. If he wins all of them, I saw one report today, and again, you know, not having the math in my head, but they said if he picks up in good form, as he did in Maryland and Virginia, just really clocking her in all of those states, if he does that in the states ahead, she's going to need to win about 60% of the delegates in these states. That begins to look like a pretty tall order.
Did you just say 60? 60%?
60%. Now, this is according to one, I think, MSNBC, which has a really good note that they put out in the morning. Their mathematician was adding it all up and said if he wins Wisconsin, if he wins Hawaii, if he wins these others that come sort of periodically between now and the big primaries in Ohio and Texas, it just ratchets up how she needs to perform, and their figure was 60%. I must say that you can figure these figures all in many, many different ways, as you know. We're having trouble kind of tracking these delegates. I mean, New Mexico hasn't even reported its Super Tuesday results. So it gets a little dicey trying to add these up.
It seems like lately we have these campaigns and we learn a new term every time. I remember, of course, with Bush and Gore, it was Dangling Chad. And this time it seems to be superdelegate. Can you tell us what people are saying about the superdelegate buzz?
Well, the superdelegate buzz sort of boils down to this. Both campaigns see this as a real, not just a possibility, but a probability that they will get to the Denver convention. Neither one of them will have the 2,050, I believe, votes that you need for the nomination. Therefore, it is left to the superdelegates, these elected officials, these party leaders who were not voted into their delegate status. They are given their delegate status. So they can vote any way they want. So you look at these superdelegates and you think, well, do they vote the way they want to vote, like who it is they like? Do they vote the way their state voted? Or do they vote for the person with the most delegates when they go into the convention? It's really, you know, there is the possibility of some open warfare if it gets to that. I mean, if you've got a candidate who has the most delegates and the super delegate denies that person the nomination, this has the possibility of being pretty fractious for the Democratic Party.
Well, you'd think that might be a PR nightmare for the Democratic Party as well, something that I would assume everybody would try really hard to avoid.
Absolutely. The superdelegates don't want to do it. It has that whole back, smoke-filled back room kind of feel to it, which is not like the Democratic Party. So I've talked to a number of superdelegates who say, you know, we don't really want to do this. We want somebody to win this, you know, before they get to Denver.
Take them off the hook. Yeah, well,
absolutely.
As I understand it, the superdelegates are expected. I mean, they were sort of a fail-safe to sort of get with make sure the party stays in the direction the core leadership wants to go in. And there was sort of an interesting article a couple weeks back in the New York Times by Matt Bai talking about how we could be looking at a time where superdelegates are feeling more independent. I don't know if I want to use the term rogue superdelegate, but are people going to be voting outside those lines of influence, do you think?
I think they will. I think that the superdelegates all have a different point of view on what they should do with that vote. As you know, the Clinton campaign and the Obama campaigns have now set up war rooms whose entire purpose is to contact these almost 800 superdelegates to say either hold your fire or here's how we think you ought to go. I mean, you have the sort of prospect, let's just take Massachusetts, where Hillary Clinton won. Well, she was endorsed by two super delegates, three actually, the governor of the state and the two U.S. senators, Kerry and Kennedy. Now, they like Barack Obama. Do they go to the convention and vote for Barack Obama, or do they vote the way their state voted, which was for Hillary Clinton?
Sounds like a bit of a quandary there for those people.
It's why they want it finished before it gets to them. And you're absolutely right. It was set up. The whole reason there were superdelegates was to kind of keep the party moving in a direction that the leadership wanted it to go. But the sort of in recent history is kind of honorary positions, and for them to have in their power the ability to undo what the states have done. If they pick someone, if they pick the candidate that has fewer delegates, it's just really problematic.
Well, it looks to be exciting times ahead.
Yeah.
And the old Chinese curse comes to mind. May you live in exciting times.
Exactly.
I imagine the Democrats are thinking of that right now. Well, Candy Crowley, I hope you have a good time while you're here in Wisconsin with the Obama campaign, and we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Candy Crowley, CNN senior political correspondent. She is following the Obama campaign here in Wisconsin on this Wednesday. I'm Veronica Rickert in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking politics this hour, taking a look at last night's primaries and looking on ahead to Wisconsin's primary coming up next Tuesday. Are you starting to think that the Obama momentum is getting overwhelming? And what about the lingering race between McCain and Huckabee. Huckabee's still asserting that voters do want a choice, and he offers that choice. But is his case growing weaker? The number to call to join in our conversation is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a lot to look forward to here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 11 o'clock today, one of the nation's most prolific travelers is Larry Mueller's guest. He's Peter Greenberg, travel editor for the Today Show on NBC and author of the Complete Travel Detective Bible. That's coming up after 11 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you. I'm in for Kathleen Dunn today as we talk politics and taking a look at last night's primaries, the so-called Potomac primaries, alongside Wisconsin's primary, which is coming up on February 19th. And we are joined now by David Nitkin, the Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. David Nitkin, thanks so much for joining us. David Nitkin, are you there? Hello? Let me try a different fader here. David Nitkin? Well, we'll try to get him in just a moment, figure out where he is on this board here. And in the meantime, let's go ahead and take a call from Jack.
Hello.
Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Thank you. Say, I enjoyed all the coverage on the results on the Potomac situation. I know those are small states, basically. But more importantly, is I wonder when you get your guest on, Obama's who I'd like to vote for, but is not giving any specifics. I hear this word, hope and change. Hope for what? Change for what? Give us some specifics and details, like we hear Senator Clinton giving us a lot of specifics and detail. They're both great candidates, but I'm not going to buy for a poke and a pig not having...
Oop, I'm sorry, Jack, I lost you there. David Nitkin, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Great.
Could you hear any of our callers' comments there?
I did hear. He was asking about Obama, Senator Obama, and specifics in his campaign.
Right, feeling that there weren't specifics there being offered by the Obama campaign in comparison with Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Right. Well, that is clearly one of the talking points of the Clinton campaign. There's no doubt about it. I heard Senator Obama on 60 Minutes over the weekend address that question in this way, saying that early on in the campaign, now I don't quite recall this, so this may be a bit of revisionist history. We'll have to check it out. But he says that early on in the campaign, he was accused of being too professorial and not talking too much in specifics. So he said he shifted his message in regards to that criticism. I would say this: with any candidate in this day and age, it's very easy to find out specifics of what they want to do. I mean, if you go to Senator Obama's website, Senator Clinton's website, you can find all kinds of policy positions on a variety of issues. Senator Obama's campaign today sent out to us in the media a very detailed economic proposal. He seems to be trending in a more populist direction coming out of the most recent primaries. I think the specifics are there. I think part of the reason the caller has that concern, and others have that concern, is that, indeed, Obama's, in his speeches and his public appearances, these huge rallies, and I would imagine you had one last night in Madison, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that's going to be the last one that will be in Wisconsin. There'll probably be some more. He's going with what's working for him, and what's working for him is this real uplifting message and a message of change. I've talked to many voters here in the Washington region who say they like him because of that message. So I think he's going with what's working for him, and perhaps it's up to the voters themselves to see if they can find the specifics by poking around on the website.
Hope that answered your question, Jack, and sorry about your unceremonious departure there. We do have a couple of open phone lines now for you to talk with David Nitkin, Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. If you'd like to join in, the number is 1-800-642-1234. The number 1-800-642-1234. And David Nitkin, Maryland had quite an exciting night last night. It was a big win for Barack Obama, and John McCain prevailed there as well. What sense did you get from voters who were leaving the polling places?
Well, we got a sense of first of all, it was an icy night for us as well. It was interesting because the polls you may have seen were kept open an additional 90 minutes in Maryland, and there was a lot of frustration among voters because the roads got very slick and people were tied up in the evening hours in particular. Here's the sense I got, that people were on the Democratic side very excited to vote, and in particular very excited to vote for Barack Obama. He carried the state fairly heavily with, more than 60% of the vote total. What I also sense is that people felt they got a lot of outreach from the Obama campaign. Anybody who was a registered Democrat or had ever signed up on his website got all kinds of phone calls to get out to the polls. I think people were impressed with the organizational effort that he was able to have on the ground in Maryland, which is a state that normally doesn't matter in a presidential contest because it's a bit of a later voting state, and I think that made a big difference. People continue to be excited here and I think elsewhere about, if you're a Democrat, about the historic nature of this choice. There's a lot of comments from voters along the lines of, I am very excited to be able to choose between what may well be the first woman president and the first African-American president. Maryland is a state which has a very sizable African-American population concentrated in the city of Baltimore and in Prince George's County, which is a suburban Washington county, one of the wealthiest majority black jurisdictions in the country. There's large pockets of African-Americans elsewhere. And those voters are highly mobilized. And there's a lot of people who are left of center who are very excited about the possibility of moving into a post-racial political environment in this country. So excitement was high, and I think voters were excited to sort of be part of continuing what looks now to be some Obama momentum.
Well, in terms of the black vote, I was reading last night that there was some 90% of African Americans voting for Obama.
Yeah.
And I believe it was Virginia, but I think those margins were pretty high across the board. And also, one of Obama's big selling points right now, he's saying that he can pick up the indies that might otherwise go to McCain, something that he feels or that he's saying Hillary Clinton's campaign cannot do.
Right. And so he indeed is is solidifying his support among the black community. I think it shifted after Iowa. I've talked to many voters and in particular African American politicians and political activists who said that something fundamentally changed. The turning points of this campaign so far seem to be for the Obama campaign is his win in Iowa, and then the comments made or interpreted by former President Clinton in South Carolina. So whereas 6 months ago, our polls in the Washington region and other polls showed that it was not at all certain that African-American support would go with Senator Obama, that has totally shifted. And the numbers you cite are correct. We're getting very close to, a 9-to-1 proportion of African-Americans supporting Senator Obama. And also, there's a large number. You may have heard his speeches recently. He starts talking about Obamacans. Have you heard that reference?
I haven't.
he started dropping it in his rallies where he'll say, I know there are Republicans who are supporting me, and then I'm sure it's not a plant because that would never happen in politics, right? But someone in the audience raises their hand, normally in the front row, and he says, there you are, and he says, we have some Republicans on our side. We have these Obamacans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think, both Obama, I would say all three candidates right now, Hillary Clinton, all three leading candidates, let's say, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and on the Republican side, John McCain, are really, while they still need to secure the delegates they need, they really do have an eye on the general election right now. And one of Obama's key points is that, yes, I can get that independent vote that's going to carry me over the top in November. You're right about that.
And in terms of John McCain, one of his strategies right now, at least as I see it from where I sit, is to sort of poo-poo Mike Huckabee and say, he's out there still, but he's not, you know, really worth noticing.
Well,
he doesn't have enough delegates. And
I think that strategy backfired last night a little bit. I think the vote in Virginia in particular was a wake-up call. That was about 50% to 41%. I'm pretty sure I have those statistics right. And there's a lot of talk that, you know, McCain cannot sort of run a Rose Garden strategy right now. I think you're right. He spent the last, say, 3 or 4 days trying to ignore Huckabee and saying this is a done deal. But I think they're a little shaken about that, and he's realizing now that he does have to compete fairly heavily, at least not have any more embarrassments as the voting goes forward. But the numbers are really out of reach for John McCain. For Mike Huckabee, the delegate numbers. John McCain, there's no way for Mike Huckabee to catch up in the race for delegates.
Well, he's not going anywhere, and you do get the sense that, you know, he's got the race in a death grip. He's not going to let go easily.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that it's not a nasty contest. So he says he wants to give people a choice, and that's why he's not going anywhere. I do think that certain elements of the conservative base do want to have that choice. Religious conservatives, social conservatives, they like that choice. But because it's not a nasty race, one has to think that it is. There are two things that are working to the advantage both of Huckabee and McCain by Huckabee staying in. McCain does face competition as these states go forward, and therefore he gets the free media. He stays in the eye of the media, because if everybody was out and it was just John McCain running, it wouldn't matter in these states that are going to vote coming up in Texas and Ohio. Is Wisconsin is that both parties voting? Forgive me for not knowing that, or is it just Democrats
so.
Next week? Yeah, both parties. So if McCain was standing alone, he'd be getting zero attention. So by Huckabee staying in that sense, it helps McCain because he gets the free media attention. Secondly, by Huckabee staying in and it not being nasty, there's no doubt that he burnishes his credentials for a potential number two spot on a ticket. Now, there's no, there's no way to say that is likelier than any other pairing or any other choice that John McCain might make. And there are very good reasons for him not to choose Mike Huckabee. But the longer he stays in, the more delegates he gets, the more votes he gets, the more prominence he gets. And the more that the social conservative wing of the party says this is our guy, the more pressure there's going to be on John McCain to choose him as a running mate.
Well, I want to get the callers in on this, so let's go on and take a call from Randall in Ripon. Hi, Randall, you're on the air. Randall, are you with us? Hello? Randall, are you there? No, I'm sorry, Randall. I hear the radio, so I know you're there somewhere. But we're going to go on to take a call from Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
I'm going to vote for Obama because I think that he has the best chance to win, and I think that he's not a known quantity, though. And John Mitchell one time said, Attorney General Mitchell said, don't look at what we say, look at what we do. Hillary, to me, is a known quantity because of NAFTA and the war. I just don't see her as a progressive. I think there are a couple themes that Obama needs to work. One is that Halloween is over. You know, the Republicans are going to work this theme of surrendering in the war on terror. But, you know, the boogeyman game, con game, has been played for a long time. We remember Reagan saying that the Sandinistas were 4 hours away from Harlingen, Texas, which was totally irrelevant because they were never a threat to us. And we have to look at basically, we're all in the war on terror, but we have to look at how we fight the war on terror in the most intelligent way. When you see pictures on television of children being trained for Al-Qaeda, that tells you that the Republican approach to things has been an abysmal failure. And that's the blowback from all of the torture and things that we've done in the world. And in the Catholic Church, there's a hymn that's sung at Mass often that says, "Whatsoever you do to the least of my brothers, that you do unto me." And you know, when you look at the justifications that the Republicans are coming up with for torture, that just exposes them for the frauds that they are. There is, you know, it's like the Giants won the Super Bowl, but they didn't cheat to win like Belichick did with New England. And the way we it's not only fighting a war, but fighting it in a moral fashion that's going to ultimately make progress for the United States on a pragmatic basis in the world.
Thank you for that call, Jim. And Jim, expressing concern about the war in Iraq there and going forward with that. As we know, Iraq has sunk a little bit in the concerns of most voters, but I'm sure it's still the number two after the economy.
There's no doubt that it's an issue. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. No doubt that it remains a fairly high-ranking concern. I mean, it's important to point out that John McCain has particular credibility on the Iraq War and terrorism. He was a supporter, or he claims to be virtually the architect of the surge strategy. And if the surge is seeing success, and by many accounts it has provided some large measure of security, although not yet political reconciliation in Iraq, then that inures to the benefit of John McCain. Jim's point about Halloween being over and the boogeyman about scaring us about terrorism, well, my view on that is that that strategy or that line of argument has worked for Republicans in presidential races and worked for Republicans in some legislative races, and they're going to keep using it until it stops working. There's nothing. I'm not sure I agree with Jim that's, in his words, Halloween is over. Those scare tactics, if you will, are over. I think they're going to continue, and I think that's going to be one of the major themes of the presidential race. And if there is major events in Iraq or major other terrorism attacks throughout the world, I think that's going to focus even more attention on that issue. And if and when the Republicans nominate John McCain, he has a particular credibility and strength on this issue. Obama seems to have more of the support of people who are fully opposed to the war. And I think... although not complete, not total, not where, Dennis Kucinich was and what Dennis Kucinich's supporters want, or what all the MoveOn.org supporters or the Daily Coast, those folks. But I think Hillary Clinton still has her work cut out for her in convincing war critics that she's the best choice in that area. So Jim raises good points, but I think Freddy Krueger is still out there. We still got the masks on. Halloween continues.
Well, we did have Madeleine Albright with us yesterday. Her new book is called Memo to the President-Elect, and she, in that book, goes on to say that she thinks it's a very real possibility that a terrorist strike would be likely somewhere, maybe not on U.S. soil, but in terms of a change of power when Bush leaves office and we have a new president in office.
And she's a lot more well-versed than I am on those issues, David Brooks had an interesting column that ran in the New York Times yesterday that talked about the fact that any Democrat's hand, be it Clinton or Obama, will really be tied from day one in the White House, because if you if you withdraw troops sort of in a knee-jerk fashion and too quickly, you will be not only alienating the military, but giving back on any gains we've gotten, and he called it a Rumsfeldian strategy in reverse, pulling out for the sake of ideology and not practicality, which I found to be a really damning criticism and a very interesting one. So the combination of that, let's say Secretary Albright is right, and there is some sort of terrorist attack on foreign soil that really would be a method of terrorists and a huge test for the next president, coupled with what really may well be a tied hand situation in the White House. It's pretty easy to see that our Iraq policy, despite the best intentions and the rhetoric of candidates, especially on the Democratic side, doesn't change all that much come next January and beyond.
We're talking with David Nitkin, Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun, talking about last night's primaries and looking ahead to Wisconsin's coming up next Tuesday. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. At half past noon, it's Chapter a Day. Join us as Jim Fleming reads from American Creation, Triumphs and Tragedies at the Founding of the Republic by Joseph J. Ellis. Veronica Rickert, back with you. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking this hour about the primaries, the race for the presidential nomination, and looking forward to Wisconsin's primary next week. We're talking with David Nitkin, Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. And let's go back to the phones now. We've got a call from Mary in Kenosha. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Well, hi. I'm glad to be on the air with the reporter from the Baltimore paper. I wanted to say that I am voting for Senator Obama, and I was listening to the last caller's comments, most of which I agree with. And in regards to the Republicans trying to create a situation where they are the ones who are better able to deal with terrorist attacks, I would just say that I think that the way they dealt with the 9/11 terrorist attack, especially President Bush going into Iraq, was awful. And I just think that the Democrats have a case to make that the way terrorist attacks have been dealt with up till now is terrible. In addition, I'm concerned that now that Hillary Clinton isn't doing as well as she was previously, there's going to be attempts again to inject race into the race. Just recently I heard that Ed Rendell, governor of Pennsylvania, made the remark that he understands that there are people in Pennsylvania, white people, who just won't vote for Barack Obama because he's black. Now, that may be true, but I just think that saying it in the way he did seemed to give permission to citizens of Pennsylvania, white citizens, not to vote for someone because they're black. And I'm just hoping that Wisconsinites wouldn't. I would be insulted as a citizen of Pennsylvania if my governor were running around saying things like that. And last but not least, I just think that in regards to where Barack Obama is coming from, that there aren't enough specifics about him out there, I think anyone who's interested in what type of person he is should read his first book, because I think that book was written prior to his running for any kind of presidential or looking at the presidential race, and I think it gives great insight into his character and his thinking, and I think that's a good starting point for people who want to know anything about what type of person this is. And I'll hang up and let you comment.
Thank you for that call. And David Nitkin?
The book Mary refers to indeed was written before Senator Obama became a politician, really. I think he got the contract to write it about the time he was editor of Harvard Law Review, and it's a biographical journey of his life from Hawaii and living in Indonesia for a time, visiting his relatives in Kenya for a time. So it does provide a background of him. Now, there's been some criticism of late of certain elements of the book. Perhaps maybe he made his youthful drug use sound a little more dramatic than it really is. Some reports have indicated to make his sort of up on his own, up from the bootstraps argument, appear more a bit more dramatic or a bit more vigorous. I'm not sure. I have not seen the Ed Rendell comments. Ed Rendell is a former prosecutor and mayor of Philadelphia, which has a sizable black population. He's white, obviously. So I don't know the context that those comments were made in. I would have to say that most people I talk to and most political experts agree that as Hillary Clinton looks to be in more trouble, that campaign, her husband, and her top allies will not go down without a fight. And so, is sure, there may well be the risk of surrogates or others injecting more race into the race, which I think we would all agree would be a disturbing thing. So Mary raises some interesting points. She talked about the Republicans, how they've been awful dealing with terrorism. One of the selling points of Obama, one of the points of his campaign, is that he will open a fresh dialogue with many world leaders. Much of the world may look very differently upon the United States if he were elected president. I think it would be fascinating to see what would happen to international relations under an Obama presidency. I think that there's a very real prospect of major changes, no doubt about it.
Well, David Nitkin, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Well, it's my pleasure, Veronica. Thank you.
Thank you. David Nitkin, Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. I wish we had time to take more of your calls. I know we had lots of callers there, but we do have some important business to take care of today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our winter membership drive, we're mid-swing in that, and it's time to go to you and ask you to support programs just like the one you heard, programs that engage, inform, sometimes even enlighten. The number to call to support Wisconsin Public Radio, to support Kathleen Dunn's program and all of Wisconsin Public Radio, is 1-800-383-9772. And we do have a goal this hour, $3,000. We are 845 of the way there. So thank you to the four of you who have called. We appreciate that. Won't you join your friends and neighbors and do the right thing and support Wisconsin Public Radio? Joined this morning by Michael Leland, Wisconsin Public Radio News Director.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing all right. And we are doing well, thanks to, as Veronica just said, you four individuals who've called in your pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio. Still plenty of time for many more of you to call in with your pledges of support to 800-383-9772, online at WPR.org. About $2,100 remaining in this hour's goal and about 10 minutes to take care of that business. These goals, of course, keep us on track to where we need to be for the overall goal of our fundraiser. And they keep this service strong, keep us able to bring you the programs, the guests, the news stories, and whatever it is you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio for. It's possible because thousands of you have already made that decision to support this service. We ask you to renew your pledge of support if it's time, or join them and become a member for the first time. And the way to do that again is by calling 800-383-9772 or pledging online any amount at WPR.org.
And we're joined in the studio now by Rhonda Fanning, Kathleen Dunn's producer for the program. She just got done saying goodbye to our guests, and she's joining us here. Hi, Rhonda.
Good morning. That's right. This hour, 800-383-9772, we are taking your pledges. You can also log on to WPR.org. To pledge support to Wisconsin Public Radio and all of the shows, so you're going to go to the polls next Tuesday and be an educated voter because of all of the programs that you've listened to on Wisconsin Public Radio. Covering each and every primary, we will certainly be on the air on Tuesday and then wrapping up on Wednesday. Because you appreciate this type of programming, please call 800-383-9772 and pledge this hour.
And we'd like to extend a special invitation this hour to new members. Maybe you've been listening for a while and you just haven't thought, well, I'm not sure it's the right time. Well, I encourage you to consider right now as the right time. This is our winter membership drive. We do have some very real bills to pay. A third of our support does come from members. And new members help keep us especially strong. The more members we have, the more stable our financial situation, and the better we're able to withstand the ups and downs of the economy. So if you've never contributed before, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the same strong, reliable, thoughtful service that you depend on, that you've been listening on. So welcome to the fold of Wisconsin Public Radio. Become a member and pledge any amount, whatever you're comfortable with, we are happy to help you out with. We're just so happy to have you along at 1-800-383-9772 or pledge online, WPR.org.
That is an important point to make, that it is entirely up to you what you give. In fact, it's really up to you whether you give. We make the case to you during these fund drives that listener support is a very important part of our budget. And in truth, we really couldn't do everything we do here without your help. So if you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, if you listen to the Kathleen Dunn program on a regular basis, maybe this is the time of day that you have some time that you can set aside and sort of focus on the discussion, whether it's about political issues or whether it's about science or the environment or the many things that you've heard Kathleen talk about over the years. All of that is possible because so many of you have already decided that this is worth supporting. So if you're among them and you're not a member yet, well, then you should call us and join at whatever level works for you. Maybe it's $5 a month. Maybe it's $10 a month. Maybe $3 a day works out to about $1,000 a year. You know how we fit into your budget, but we do ask that you make that decision, and then we ask that you please call us at 800-383-9772 or pledge online at WPR.org.
1-800-383-9772, the number to call. Maybe you'd like to consider a pledge of $120. That's $10 a month, and a good way to spread it out might be to do it with your electronic funds transfer option. We take it $10 a month for you, or if you'd like to do it all in one lump sum, you might like to write us a check, and we can send you a reminder for that. We make it very easy for you, but the added bonus here when you get a pledge at that level is we're happy to send you out the member benefit card. Lots of bang for your buck there in terms of dining out. So if you like to do that, there's a 2-for-1 nights at bed and breakfast, and there's cultural attractions like museums and performances. So it's really a great way to have some nights out over the year and save a little money while doing it and supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Every time you take out that card and use it, you can be reminded that you did a good thing. You supported something that you believe in. You said thank you, and it was a responsible thing to do and a great thing to do. So the member benefit card can be yours for a pledge of $120. We just look forward to your phone call. Why not call right now at 1-800-383-9772.
And it's a perfect hour to pledge, because I know a lot of you out there come to rely on Kathleen and Veronica to bring you the type of shows to make you that educated voter. And when you go to the poll on Tuesday and you cast your vote, you're going to walk away feeling really good that you took part and you're trying to make a difference. And that's kind of the same feeling that you get and you pledge to public radio. So please call 800-383-9772. Only a couple of minutes left this hour. So if you come to rely on these political shows, please call. It's a perfect time, perfect hour. 800-383-9772. And thank Kathleen and thank Veronica and Joy and Ben Marins for making you an educated voter.
1-800-383-9772. And I do want to point out that there's only 5 minutes left to go in this hour. And really, we're really working our way through toward the end of our pledge drive. There are only 2 more days of the weekday programming of Kathleen Dunn's program. And I know she'd love to be here with you because she's, of course, incredibly passionate about her program. She likes to bring you things that interest her as well as you. And we know that those interests overlap a lot. There's the presidential trivia cards. She's a huge presidential historian. She's a huge political buff. And she's just got one of those Renaissance minds that goes out there and finds lots to be interested in, including medicine and the arts and politics and world affairs. She brings that to you because you're interested, too. It's really a partnership. And I know that that's something you'll want to support this morning because you listen, because you love Kathleen, and because, you know, you find yourself mentioning things you've heard on Wisconsin Public Radio. They're important to you. And it's important to us this morning that you decide to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio and support this program at 1-800-383-9772.
You pay for a lot of things, whether it's a daily newspaper or your electricity or your cable bill or many other things, and you don't get to put a value on it. You don't get to pay what you think it's worth. But that is the way public radio works. We put the service out there. We're happy to produce these programs and give you this information that makes you a better informed person. But then we ask you, well, what's it worth to you? What can you afford? How does it fit into your budget? And we ask you to consider that and know that it's all of us working together at whatever level works for us. Maybe it's worth $120 a year for you, and you can make a pledge at that level. Maybe it's worth $1,000 a year, and you can pledge at that level if that fits into your budget. It's really up to you. The case we make to you is that it is important for you to make that decision and call us at 800-383-9772 to pledge online at WPR.org. Do it now and help us take care of this remaining $1,800 in this hour's goal. But think about it. What do you value? What is this worth to you? And how much can you afford? And then call us, 800-383-9772, WPR.org.
1-800-383-9772. The goal, $3,000 we're looking for this hour, and just a few minutes left to go in this hour. And as we said, just a couple more days of this Kathleen Dunn program. Friday is our last day. So, why, you know, in the weekend, things to get a little bit crazy, a little bit harried. So why not pledge right now while you're thinking of it and get it out of the way? You'll feel very good about it the next time you turn on the radio. You can join Carol in Madison, who has said supporting WPR is something that everyone should do. And also Paula in Racine, who is a new member and has been listening for a year or so, especially likes the political discussion. She says, keep it up. And we will, Paula, with your help and the help of your friends and neighbors, your fellow Wisconsin Public Radio community members. Whether or not you contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're part of the community. But when you do decide to become a member and help support Wisconsin Public Radio, it deepens that connection, it deepens that partnership, and it strengthens us both. So won't you call and join Carol and Paula and support Wisconsin Public Radio, support Kathleen Dunn's program at 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772 is the number to call. Or you can pledge online at WPR.org.
We've got just a few seconds to go before we join NPR for the news and then on with the next hour of the program. But still plenty of time for you to get in and take care of this bit of business, that business being supporting your public radio station. There's no unimportant amount. You know how much you listen. You know how much you you know what you get from Wisconsin Public Radio. And you know that it makes a difference in your life in one way or another. We ask you to support it with your dollars, knowing that it's your dollars that make this possible. Please give us a call now, 800-383-9772, or pledge online at WPR.org.
Just a couple of minutes left to go. You can call during the news to reach our $3,000 goal. Reach us at 1-800-383-9772 or pledge online at WPR.org, and we thank you for your support.